This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Thursday. We're going to talk about this NATO policy shift here in just a moment. We'll get to some questions about security clearances because Trump yanked some of those security clearances today. The elimination of the Department of Education, which isn't happening, but we thought it was going to happen. We'll talk about why. We'll do emails, tariffs, all kinds of stuff coming up on the Jesse Kelly Show. And Josh Hammer joins us a half hour from now to talk about the Supreme Court thing. Remember, tomorrow is an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. You need to email your questions into jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Now, NATO policy. Last night, maybe you saw it, maybe you didn't, but Macron, the head of France, he put out a public statement to his people in France, which obviously went around the globe, that said, we're not laying off Ukraine. We're not going to let Ukraine fall. We are digging in. Russia is a threat to all of us. We might even expand our nuclear protection to that area. He was so forceful that Russia came out and said, you better watch yourself with all this nuclear talk. So it was, I don't want to freak you out, but I'll tell you, as I was laying in bed last night, it was on my mind. It really was. Don't dismiss how bad this could get going forward. In fact, we're going to discuss that as part of our NATO discussion here. Now, before I go to Trump and play what Trump was talking about today as it pertains to NATO, I want you to keep just a couple things in mind. First, Europe has 500 million people in it. America has 300, give or take. Europe is bigger than America, significantly so, right? NATO, well, America contributes two-thirds of the NATO forces, two-thirds. If you added every other country, they don't equal half of what we pay. We are NATO. And there is a requirement that they never seem to fulfill that they have to spend a certain percentage of their country's budget. Pick your NATO country. A certain percentage has to be spent on military force so you can be a contributing member to NATO. And they rarely do it. They rarely meet the number. If you remember, if you're kind of one of these policy nerd types or you're just into politics, Trump was all over NATO the first time about this. He was constantly scolding them. You don't even contribute what you should. You don't contribute what you should. He was constantly yelling about it. And there's another part to NATO, and this was on my mind last night, big time. I was laying there and I really got myself kind of freaked out about it. So I'm not trying to freak you out, but you've heard about the Article 5. Have you ever heard Article 5 when it comes to NATO? Ever heard about that? Article 5. What does that even mean? Well, I won't bore you with all the details around it, but what Article 5 is if one NATO country gets into it with, let's just say Russia, because that's who we're talking about here, Article 5 means every NATO country must go to war. That's part of the whole NATO thing. Now, as you can imagine why it was on my mind last night. I watched Macron say, hey, no, we're getting involved, might have to expand our nuclear protection. We've recently seen the UK PM come out and saying, we're sending our planes, we're sending our troops. We are not seeing the de-escalation, the peace talks we were hoping. We're seeing other NATO countries turn the volume up instead of turning the volume down. And I was laying there last night thinking to myself, what if this thing, and you know, Russia, you can't trust them either. What if this thing, completely out of our control, what if this thing gets turned up into an Article 5 situation? And look, it doesn't exactly take a Tom Clancy novel to figure out how that might happen. What if France is serious? And I doubt they're serious, but what if they are? What if France starts putting boots on the ground in Ukraine? What if a French fighter jet violates Russian territory, flies a mission, shoots something, power plant inside of Russia? What will Russia do? Well, Russia's going to respond. Keep in mind, Russia's spending 40% of its budget on their military right now to win this war. Russia, no, I'm not going to tell you they're this unstoppable Russian bear, not at all. But Russia is significantly better than they were a few years ago as far as being a wartime country. They've learned what works, what doesn't work. They have completely transitioned their economy into being a military economy, very similar to what we did during World War II, actually, where we just had auto plants that were making tanks all of a sudden. That kind of thing is what Russia has done with their economy. Russia is primed for war now, ready to fight it. Jets, tanks, everything, drones, really. Russia is ready. What if this thing goes to a place we don't want it to go? And then Article 5. You know what that means. Article 5, that means, hey, America, Article 5, Russia attacked us, send in the troops. So I'll be honest, I really was happy. I'm going to let him play it. I'm not going to interrupt him. Trump talked about NATO policy today, and it has a lot of ears perked up across the pond.
Well, I think it's common sense, right? If they don't pay, I'm not going to defend them. No, I'm not going to defend them. I got into a lot of heat when I said that. You said, oh, he's violating NATO. And, you know, the biggest problem I have with NATO, I really, I know the guys very well. They're friends of mine. But if the United States was in trouble and we called them, we said, we got a problem, France, we got a problem, a couple of others I won't mention. Do you think they're going to come and protect us? They're supposed to. I'm not so sure. So
the headline is Trump's latest shock NATO policy shift has allies in disbelief. I am so grateful Donald Trump is president right now. Because what he's doing is he's letting them know, I want this war to end. I want a peace process. Remember, we already had Russia ready for a peace process. Trump had already reached out, diplomatic channels, talked to the Russians. They were ready. We already had a mineral deal with Zelensky, ready. In fact, they had the binders ready to sign. Trump, to his credit, Trump and Rubio too. I don't want to dismiss Rubio and Walz and the other diplomats involved. They got involved diplomatically, talked to both sides, brought them to the table. Let's sign an agreement. Ukraine needs to be protected. Russia, obviously, they're going to get to keep some of what they took. Fine, but let's end this. 1.5 million people dead. Let's be done with it. Donald Trump, president of the United States of America, did exactly what he said he was going to do, and he had arranged for this thing to end. Zelensky decided he was going to get belligerent in the meeting. You saw it. Immediately, the other NATO members, PM after PM after PM, came out and said, no, we're standing with Zelensky. Fight on. No, we'll send jets. No, screw this. You had Macron of France last night. We might go nuclear. And Donald Trump came out today and essentially told them, if you morons think you're going to ratchet this thing up to 11 when I had it turned down to 1, and then claim Article 5, oh, wait, we're in trouble now. America, come help. You got another thing coming. Don't think for a second you're going to be belligerent here, turn it up to 11, and then ask Daddy America to come save Europe once again. Because America is out on the saving Europe business. It's time for Europe to save Europe. We've already done that twice. Europe, you're on your friggin' own. Enough of that. And it's exactly what I wanted to hear, because part of my late night tossing and turning as I was trying to go to sleep, and I had this stuff on my mind, I was brewing on it. I was thinking selfishly, I'll be frank with you. I have a 14-year-old boy. I have a 16-year-old boy. Now, I'm not going to be dramatic. I don't know where this is going to go. I hope we get some sort of a peace soon. But what if bombs, missiles start crossing each other in the sky in Europe, Russia, France, Germany? It's happened before. What if this thing goes to a place that's really, really ugly? It's not at all ridiculous to think about my oldest boy, James, in uniform somewhere. And I couldn't get it off my mind. And it worries me a lot. So I'm very grateful to Trump for this, for how he's speaking about it. That's what he's saying. You know that's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. Hey, don't you dare think you're just going to get turn this thing up and then call on daddy to come help. That ain't how that works at all. I had it ready to be quashed. You want to keep it going? Let me know how it works out for you. All right. That's enough of that. Let's do some emails before we move on to other things, which we have a lot of. We have some audio about the astronauts that I was talking about earlier. I really want to talk about the assassination attempt. That might completely freak you out. We still have to talk to Josh Hammer. I want to talk first about preborn and saving babies. Unborn babies' lives. We got Roe versus Wade overturned. That's great. We won an election. Good, good. Sounds good. Babies are killed now as rapidly as they have ever been in this country. That's due to the abortion pill. Yeah, we got all these legislative victories. The abortion pill made it too easy to get an abortion. These young girls, they're taking telehealth meetings, essentially a Zoom call, and getting an abortion pill sent to their house. How do we fight against evil that's that accessible? Preborn gives them free ultrasounds. Hey, young lady, how about a free ultrasound? If we can just get her in for the ultrasound, we can save that baby. If she hears that heartbeat, we can save the baby. $28 buys the ultrasound. Preborn.com/Jesse. Preborn.com/Jesse. Sponsored by Preborn. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. We got Josh Hammer coming up about 10 minutes from now to talk to us about the Supreme Court decision. Don't forget, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. I got to clear out some emails before we get to Josh Hammer and some of the other Trump stuff from today. I should let you know, Trump talked today about the reports on his attempted assassination attempts. Attempted assassination attempts? That's most definitely not how you're supposed to say that. On his attempted assassinations, whatever. I've got a little bit more info you might not know about one of them. It's pretty creepy. We'll get to that in a little bit. Anyway, let's do some emails. Jesse, I have your cartel name all worked out. No problemo. Better than Las Manitas. Anyway, Las Manitas? Chris, figure out what that means in Mexican. He said, our messaging needs to evolve clearly and concisely and immediately to what we just saw in a pithy and amusing way. I wish I knew someone who could do that. You know anyone like that? He's talking about the State of the Union speech and all the laughs that Trump got. Look, I'll only say this. You ask other Republicans to do that, and some can and some can't. Personality is... it's not something you can just decide you're going to have. Now, you can develop one over time, but it involves doing things. A lot of people who maybe struggle. Do you struggle in certain social situations? A lot of people do. Some people are just Mr. Party, Mr. Personality. You're living it up. Ah, ha, ha. And some people are much more reserved. Maybe you have social anxiety. Maybe you're nervous. Well, you know you can develop a personality over time, but it involves doing the one thing you don't want to do. You have to mingle with people. You have to talk to people. And what we tend to do is, I'm the same way, it's human nature, we tend to take what we're good at and do a lot of that, and we tend to take what we're bad at and avoid it completely. We just avoid it altogether. So if you're out of shape, you're too fat, you never work out. Why? Because working out's harder for you. It hurts for you. It's no fun. Your legs hurt. Your hips hurt. So you just don't do it at all, right? Instead of working on it, you don't do it. Personality is the same thing. You want to get rid of that social anxiety? You want to be better with people? Fellas, you want to be better talking to dimes? dimes? You want to be better flirting with dudes? You got to go talk to people. You got to go find social settings, whatever they may be, and talk to people. There's not a second way. Politicians. Look, Trump is very charming. His charisma dripping off of him. You can't just do that. It's taken a lifetime of work of mingling with people to develop that. We look at Trump's charisma and we want other people to have it. Well, it doesn't just come by osmosis. It's not magic. All right. So yeah, I get that. I get that. No, I can't teach people how to do it, but thank you. Hey, Jesse, another great show tonight. I heard you talking about the lonely deaths of World War II pilots in the Pacific. It reminded me of a trip I made back to Japan in 1995. On my way, I was going to spend a few days in Guam to snorkel and sightsee. I noticed 4 to 5 seniors in good shape for their age, wearing World War II veteran caps, walking the aisle with a plane, laughing and getting drunk. Of course they were. I asked them why they were going to Guam. Turned out they were pilots in the war and wanted to scuba, snorkel, and snorkel the Japanese ships they sunk during the Battle of Guam. They were very cool guys. I'm fortunate to have met them. These vets must have been in their 60s or 70s. I want to so snorkel the ships. Remember when we had Terry Shepard on? It was a while ago, so if you're a new listener, you won't remember. But Terry Shepard is one of these super stud Green Beret types. He's a friend of mine. And he has a charity. I forget what it is. A really cool charity. But one of their what they do is he goes around the world. Last time I talked to him, he was in Saipan. He was snorkeling, looking at the fallen American aircraft, trying to get the American remains, they're just bones now, trying to get the bones out of the American aircraft so we can bring these guys back home. So their bones can be laid to rest in America. Task Force Dagger. That's right, Chris. I knew I'd think of it before you could. Chris definitely didn't write that on the screen. I thought of it first. Task Force Dagger is what it's called. It's a really cool charity, really cool thing he does. But how cool would it be to go scuba dive war remains? I mean, don't you think that would be awesome? What, Chris? What? Oh, yeah, you're not wrong. Chris said what those guys did from the email was way cooler because they were the ones who shot them down. They were the ones who sunk the ships. Imagine coming back 40 years later with your pilot buddies strapping on some scuba gear and diving down to look at the ship you sunk and tell me you wouldn't want to go in it. Now, you probably shouldn't because of all the danger. Things can fall. You can get trapped. You just never know. It's a very dangerous thing. You go underwater, it can be very, very dangerous. You would want to go in it, right? But that in and of itself may be heavy depending on whether it's American or Japanese. Remember when we talked about the USS Johnston? Now, nobody's going to go get that because it's 20,000 feet under the sea. But what if you could go in it? You're going to go into a compartment and you're going to see bones of Americans. I think that would get to me. I think it would. Anyway, let's talk to Josh Hammer about Supreme Court stuff. And then I'm going to talk to you about what Trump said today about his assassination attempts and clarify some things he was talking about, because there's a lot of icky out there. First, let's deal with your pain. Let's get rid of your pain. The nagging pain in your life. I'm talking about physical pain. Relief Factor can't help you with the emotional pain of, you know, having to work with people like Chris and Corey. But if your back hurts, it can. If your pectoral hurts, it can. Your foot hurts. Your hand hurts. That's inflammation. That's what that is. Your body's already trying to fight it, and age being what it is, sometimes your body needs a little boost. Relief Factor is 100% drug-free. It's developed by doctors. You take it every day. It's a supplement. It helps support your body's response to inflammation. You know, something like 70% of the people who order Relief Factor the first time order more. Why do you think they do that? Try a three-week quick start for $19.95. That's it. You might be $19.95 away from having no more back pain. 1-800-4-RELIEF or go to relieffactor.com. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Thursday, reminding you that tomorrow is an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, and you need to get your questions emailed in right now to jesse@jessekellyshow.com. But we don't have any time for that because my friend Josh Hammer, host of the amazing America on Trial, joins us now to discuss why the Supreme Court sucks so bad. Josh, I'm so sick of watching our choices for the Supreme Court knife us in the back time after time after time. Roberts, it's Amy Coney Barrett. Kavanaugh is always good for one of these every now and then. Can you explain what they do to pick their people versus what we do? Because clearly they've got a better process.
Jesse, they have a better process because they actually pick people who they know how the results are going to be. And part of that is methodological. Part of that is because left-wing jurisprudence going back at least about 100 years, going back to the New Deal and the FDR presidency, has just been inherently progressive, outcome-oriented. Most people on the right these days subscribe to originalism, which is not an inherently outcome-oriented method of jurisprudence. Jesse, I actually have my own unique twist on this. I actually was just on the road this weekend in California. I did debate at UCLA Law School just yesterday on this topic. I have a twist on this that I call common good originalism, which is a slightly different approach to constitutional interpretation than most people in legal conservative circles. So I do fault the methodology itself to an extent. But above all, Jesse, I really, even more so than methodological problems, I fault the fact that people on our side just are just absolutely terrible at doing the reading. So, for instance, you know, Amy Coney Barrett has quickly emerged as the worst of the Trump nominees. No doubt about that. She royally screwed up here on the foreign aid case, on the USAID case there. She had a terrible vote. I think it was just last week on an EPA case out of San Francisco. She had a god-awful vote on the Fisher case, the J6er case last summer, where she voted to the left of Ketanji Brown Jackson, actually. Ugh. So she's become the worst. But, you know, even the best of the Trump justices, Neil Gorsuch there, he's had some pretty high-profile mess-ups as well. The biggest would be this 2020 case, a case called Bostock involving Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, where he basically wrote the majority opinion for the court interpreting because of sex, so sex discrimination, as also including sexual orientation and gender identity, which is insane. But I say all that, Jesse, because if we had just done the reading, we would have seen that Justice Gorsuch basically wrote that back in 2009, actually, in a Ninth Circuit case where he was sitting as a judge. So that's just one thing where you got to just do the reading. I mean, yeah, I think back, you know, I mean, you mentioned John Roberts, all the people that we thought would be solid who are not solid. You can honestly go back even further than this. You can go all the way back at least as far as the George H.W. Bush presidency from the early 90s. Now, Jesse, I was like 2 years old, so I'm not going to say I remember this personally, but based on what I've read about it there, for the seat that ultimately went to David Souter, you basically had two finalists. You had Edith H. Jones, who is in Houston, Texas. She's been one of the most rock-rib members of conservative judges for four decades now, ever since she was nominated by Ronald Reagan. You had her, and then you had David Souter. And what happened was you had Governor Sununu of New Hampshire, who knew David Souter because they're both from New Hampshire, who basically whispered in George H.W. Bush's ear and said, "Trust me, trust me. You can take my word for it." And, you know, within a year or two, David Souter was a reliable liberal member of the court, voting with Ginsburg and all that. So after that, Jesse, people on the right said, "No more Souters. We've learned our lesson." And have we? Have we actually learned our lesson? Because it seems like the answer is no. It seems like the answer is no. We have not learned our lesson. So I'm sick of this. Do the homework, vet these people better, make sure you're getting solid conservatives, not these single issue nerds that upset over regulatory and economic issues, but don't care about the actual culture war issues, the civilizational issues that many of us care the most about there. And make sure you get people in there, for God's sake, who are not going to chicken out when the limelight is on you, who actually have the courage and the conviction to do the right thing. Easier said than done, I recognize there, but it's not the hardest thing in the world, Jesse. It's not rocket science either.
Speaking with Josh Hammer, host of America on Trial. Josh, it's obviously not exactly breaking news that the legal institutions, meaning the educational institutions in this country, are far, far left. I mean, honestly, some of these are to the left of Mao, including our most prestigious ones. So do they simply have a much deeper bench than we do, a lot bigger crop to choose from? You know how uneducated and stupid I am, so I'm on the outside looking in. I'm genuinely asking.
No, I don't think that's true. I mean, there are more liberal attorneys than conservative attorneys. I mean, the legal profession, like many other white-collar professions, is disproportionately Democrats, progressives, liberals, whatever you want to call them. But I mean, Jesse, I think to the courts of appeal, you know, again, Trump's three justices, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, Barrett, Gorsuch is the best of them, but as we said, he's not perfect. But if you go down to the federal courts of appeal, I mean, I clerked for Judge James C. Ho on the Fifth Circuit. I was one of Judge Ho's first four law clerks on the Fifth Circuit there in Texas. Fantastic judge. And the Fifth Circuit in general, Trump's nominees were superb. I literally watched that court transformed with my very own eyes over the course of the year that I clerked on it. And there's many other courts of appeal that are the same way. So the lower court judicial nomination picks during the first Trump administration were really quite exceptional. There are a couple of duds, but they're really few and far between. This seems to be more of a problem at the level of the U.S. Supreme Court. And part of that is just kind of it's really kind of like a limelight thing. You know, there's this old theory called the greenhouse effect, because there was this old liberal New York Times columnist called Linda Greenhouse, who basically said that every time a conservative judge gets to the Supreme Court, the cultural pressure, the Georgetown cocktail parties, all that stuff, they're all going to move to the left. And it's a real problem. It's an actual problem there. We see it sometimes in Brett Kavanaugh's writings. He's kind of begging to be liked by people that are not inclined to like him there. So we need people who frankly just don't give a crap, who genuinely, just like Donald Trump himself, could not give the smallest crap in the world about what the corporate media elites and whatnot think of them. Again, easier said than done, but those people are out there. They do exist.
Okay. Now, let me ask you something. By the way, Josh, do you have another 10 minutes? Because I have like 10 more questions for you that I haven't even got to yet. Now I'm getting sidetracked. It's fine if you don't, but do you?
Yeah, you bet.
Okay, good, because I'm going to ask this one. Thinking about what you just said, would it benefit us, or is this something that's an impossibility or ridiculous, to move the Supreme Court? Simply, I understand they maybe have to meet in that building or something like that, but why can't we move it? Why can't it be in Omaha, Nebraska, or something like that? If we have a DC cocktail party system problem, why not remove the justices from that cocktail party system?
It's a good question. I've never really thought about it, Jesse. There's nothing in the Constitution that would preclude that as a possibility. There's probably a statute or something that does require it, but that statute presumably could be modified if you wanted to. So here's the flip side on that, actually. So there is this kind of whole conversation about moving not just the court but various agencies out into the American heartland. My good friends Jonathan and Paige Berniski, they're husband and wife here in Florida where I live, great personal friends of mine. They actually co-wrote a piece for The Federalist maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, arguing that this is actually a bad idea, because when you move these agencies, and the Supreme Court is not that different in this respect there, you're also basically bringing the liberal culture of a lot of these places to these otherwise red bastions, right? So, in theory, maybe moving the Supreme Court is to a place like Norman, Oklahoma, whatever, might make sense, but you're also going to risk ruining the culture of Norman, Oklahoma. So it's kind of a two-edged sword, but it's an intriguing idea. And frankly, those are the kind of drastic reforms that I'm always sympathetic to. I'm not sure if I'm sold on it, but I'm definitely sympathetic to the idea.
Yeah, I did have a brilliant idea. We're going to be right back with more Josh Hammer as he and I fix all the legal problems. You know what legal people we are. Anyway, Josh Hammer, by the way, he has a book coming out, Israel and Civilization. I would recommend you pre-order. We'll be back with some more Josh Hammer. Before I get to Josh Hammer, I want you to think about something for me. I want you to think about what's your favorite home movie you've ever recorded? What's your favorite picture or picture book you have. Do you have a baby album? Do you have a picture of grandma holding you on your lap? Now, I've got a bit of a somber thought for you. You know that thing is fading away, right? Slowly but surely, it's fading away. These physical VHS tapes, the camcorder tapes, the picture that's hanging on your wall, time, heat, cold, humidity, just time itself ruins them. It will go away eventually. Legacy Box for me is more than just a family company creating American jobs that's been doing this forever in Tennessee. They get to preserve memories of my dad for me, of my aunt who I just lost, of my grandma Helen who's gone, my grandpa Hank. Those pictures, I only have hard pictures of them. They'll leave without Legacy Box. Go to Legacy Box, get them to send you a box. Right now, for a limited time, they're half off. Once you get the box, at your leisure, there's no rush. Put those VHS tapes in there, those pictures in there, and let them digitize it all for you. And then they'll send them back, right? You get the hard copies and a digital copy. Humidity cannot destroy. LegacyBox.com/Jesse saves you 50%. LegacyBox.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. We still have more than an hour of the Jesse Kelly Show, but we are back with my friend Josh Hammer, host of America on Trial, and has a book coming out, Israel in Civilization, which you should go pre-order. Okay, Josh. Now, when we talked earlier today, you told me there might be some good news with this crappy Supreme Court decision where Amy Coney Barrett and John Roberts, of course, screwed us over. Expand on that. Why might this work out okay in the end?
Well, Jesse, it kind of gets into the procedural weeds a little bit here. But what happened here in this case is you had the district court judge and a man by the name of Amir Ali. And this guy's a left-wing activist, okay? I mean, he was a professional left-wing agitator of a lawyer as recently as like 5 months ago. He was one of Joe Biden's last nominees to the federal bench. He literally took his seat in late November, even after the election, during the lame duck portion of Biden's presidency. But what he did was he put what lawyers call a TRO, a temporary restraining order, purporting to demand that USAID not issue that they will continue to issue this $2 billion in foreign aid funding. And then he basically went ahead and he renewed his temporary restraining order. So what the court did here, what the Supreme Court did, is they basically said that we're not going to review this at this time. We're just going to pass because it's coming to us in the procedural posture, we might say, of a temporary restraining order. What they're saying is that he hasn't even declared a full-scale injunction, which is kind of the more sweeping remedy, saying like you actually are fully stopped from doing this. So they're basically making a procedural point that it's not fully ripe for their review at this time. Now, the point, among other points, that Sam Alito and the other dissenting justices make in their dissent is he says, well, you know, we can call this a temporary restraining order, but at some point when you keep on renewing it, it kind of ceases to be temporary. It's not really temporary anymore, right? So one way or the other, though, this is going to make its way back to the Supreme Court. And eventually it's going to make it back to the Supreme Court, not on this procedural question, but on the actual underlying substantive constitutional separation of powers question. The actual separation of powers question that is relevant here is the president forced to disperse, in this case, $2 billion in funding that has been discretionarily authorized by the USAID? And the short answer is no, that he is not required to do so because the judiciary simply just has no ability to dictate to the president what funding decisions he may or may not make. So that's kind of just a basic separation of powers decision. So when it actually gets back to the court on the constitutional merits, Jesse, I'm a little more optimistic here. Basically, Roberts and Barrett took a convenient procedural off-ramp, which allowed them to not rule on the merits, but there eventually will be a ruling on the merits there, and I'm a little more optimistic about that.
I like that. That makes me feel better. All right. One more thing, Josh. Moving forward, we we see so much of this, so much of these, so many of these stumbling blocks that the system is obviously going to try to do to try to stop Donald Trump's agenda. Can there be one sweeping ruling? Will there be one sweeping ruling? Or is this, I don't want to be doomsday, but it's been a couple months. Are we just in for 4 years of this, of Trump doing something good, the court stops it, we have to wait for the Supreme Court? But can we be done with this ever?
It's probably going to be a lot more of this, I hate to say it. A lot of these liberal judicial nominees from Barack Obama and Joe Biden, they despise Donald Trump basically as much as the MSNBC talking heads despise him. So this is a very personal issue for a lot of judges. A lot of these judges have TDS, Trump derangement syndrome, the exact same way that some talking heads and elected officials in Congress and so forth have it there. But here's what I will say, Jesse. There actually is one thing that the Supreme Court can and must do that will have the largest and most sweeping effect to disincentivize these lower court judges, these lower court judicial insurrectionists, as I've called them, to prevent them from acting out of line. And that ruling is you have to rule once and for all that there is no such thing as a so-called nationwide injunction, because it's illegitimate. It falls outside the bounds of the judicial power of which Article 3 of the Constitution speaks. Because the idea that a single judge could bring the entirety of the executive branch to a halt, that's just not how our system of government works. So for instance, just to give one example here, there's this letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote back in 1804 to Abigail Adams, the wife of John Adams, where he famously said that to give the power to the judiciary to decide cases not just for themselves, but as it affects the direct dealings of the other two branches, will make the judiciary a despotic branch, make them just a tyrannical branch. So it's just not our system of governance. And the sooner that the Supreme Court can basically kick these so-called nationwide injunctions to the curb, the better. Because the first time around, Donald Trump faced, by my count, 64 to 65 or so of these nationwide injunctions, which, by the way, Jesse, more than the first 44 presidents of the United States combined, go figure. It really was debilitating the first time around. And we've got to get a definitive ruling on this. That's got to happen ASAP. Hopefully, the acting Solicitor General of the United States, Sarah Harris, and the soon-to-be full-time Solicitor General, John Sauer of Missouri, they're both outstanding lawyers. Hopefully, they get that petition teed up nicely for the justice, because that ruling has to happen ASAP.
Fingers crossed. He is Josh Hammer. Go get his book ordered, Israel and Civilization. Josh, my brother, I appreciate you as always. Thank you for making us smarter.
Take care, my friend. Good.
Josh and I know so much about the Constitution, don't we, Chris? What, Chris? Josh and me? We really educate people on all the different articles and things. Do you want to know as much as me and maybe Josh? You know, Hillsdale will teach you about the Constitution for free. You realize that? Hillsdale College, that amazing university everybody wants their kids to get into. The kind of university I could never get into. More than 40 free online courses, Hillsdale College. Do you know they have a Constitution 101? You think you know, right? Because we know the First Amendment and Second Amendment. You will learn so much more about the Constitution and why certain things were put in there. Because sometimes you read something and you kind of gloss over it or you don't understand it. Hillsdale will teach you. Your kids will enjoy it. It's something healthy and fun to do as a family. At no cost. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse is where you go to enroll. Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. All right. We still have an hour. I am going to try to carve up some serious emails and make some room there. I also want to talk about swallowing jewelry. That apparently is something we have to discuss as a people here. Swallowing jewelry. Next.
This is an iHeart podcast.